Welcome in to This Has to Work. I'm Matt Hoddle, and over there is...
Mickey Millsap.
In this series that we're going to run for This Has to Work, we're going to talk about the first year of the Alabama Futures Fund. Some of you may be familiar with that, some of you may not, but by the end of the series, for better or for worse, you will know quite a bit about it. So what I really wanted to focus in on this series is kind of what we saw, what we learned, how we see the fund moving forward, and kind of some things along the way that, you know, might be interesting. So in essence, kind of taking the peeling the curtain back and seeing what it was like in the first year to run the Alabama Futures Fund. So just a recap, it's a, you know, $25 million early stage venture capital fund. One of the primary requirements for investment is to be located in the state of Alabama or willing to relocate to the state of Alabama. We're investing in companies that are what we consider kind of post MVP, right at go to market, and probably still trying to figure out a little bit of that product market fit, and the customer discovery is still raw, probably in most cases. So, but what's interesting, I think, to start off with, to give it some frame of reference, is so the fund is a year old now, and that's really what kind of prompted this short series on it. But I think it was interesting to look at some of the statistics from the first year just to kind of put things in perspective. So we had, and I don't even know if you know all these numbers, Mickey.
I may not.
You lived them, although right. You may not have been calculating them all the way. So we've had, we've looked at more than 180 companies now. And I know it's more than that, but that's what we actually captured. And I know that we have, you know, that in our CRM that we use. We've made 5 investments, which I know you know. You've been keeping track of that.
I have.
Been involved.
Been involved in a few of those.
In each of those, which actually translates into a 2.7% investment rate. And it's actually probably a little bit lower than that if we captured every single thing that we looked at. Because, I mean, we went to pitch competitions. We sat one-on-one with founders, and they may or may not have ever found their way into our CRM, but they were there. So, yeah, 2.7%. Not a lot, right? I think that shows it's not that easy to get investment if you start looking at those numbers. So we've looked at startups in more than, I know you don't know this. I looked this up. We've looked at startups in more than 20 different states.
Wow.
Did you know that?
I didn't.
Yeah. I thought it was like 6 or 7. But then when I really actually went through the list, I was like, there's a lot more here than I realized. We had like 4 or 5 from California, two of which we actually invested in, but we'll get into that.
They came this way.
That's right. We received submissions from 8 different countries. I also didn't know that. Again, I thought it was maybe a handful here or there, but I started looking at it and we got a ton of, especially from some of the brokers, which that's a whole other thing we'll get into at some point. But
I think some of those wanted us to send them money.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You
know, via wire.
Right. Exactly. Right. Yes. There was a prince in trouble.
That's right.
And just for the low, low cost of $150 money order, we could get him unlocking millions of dollars. Yeah. Anyway. So what's interesting is that we talked about the 5 investments that we made, or we talked about that or mentioned that. And 4 of those 5 actually relocated to Alabama. So they were not from here originally. Are you surprised by that in retrospect?
Yeah, I mean, I think a little bit. We were thinking about what kind of surprised us most about the first year. And when we started this process, you know, we believed that we were going to be capable of, I don't want to say recruiting companies, but getting them excited about coming to Alabama to launch their business or to grow it and scale it. And I think there were more doubters about that than I think we probably believed it, but I don't think we really believed it till it happened. So, I'm excited by it. I mean, that's 80% of the investments have come from out of state. And, you know, I don't know that trend continues at such a high rate, but yeah, it's really exciting. I mean, I think it talks a lot about what's going on in Birmingham and in the state, and that founders are really looking for different opportunities to launch their company in places where they're going to get more attention and get the help that they need, because this is hard stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So 4 of those companies located in Birmingham, 1 of them in Huntsville. So still kind of a heavy bias towards Birmingham so far, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's going to continue. But suffice to say, looking at all those, we've been pretty busy.
I would agree with that. It's been, you know, and I think that over the course of the year, that's changed a little bit. You know, at the very beginning, it was all about kind of finding those companies and sourcing them and looking for deals. And now as we move in with five portfolio companies all still active, seeing that role shift a little bit where we're having to, you know, we're getting them at an early stage, spending time with them. So now it's everything we were doing in the first 6 months of the fund, plus kind of working with these companies and helping them develop.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So there, we're definitely at that time period where a transition, I don't want to say transition, but just additive, right? So there's more work to be done and it feels more holistic, right? Yeah. So now you're not just trying to find those investments, but you're actually having to and wanting to and spending time with the companies in which you've already invested.
And I think that's the thing for me that having not done this before on this side, having been on the other side, as a founder, you go through all the kind of emotions of running a company, you know, the good days, the bad days, and it can just be up and down so much. I didn't know that being on this side and having portfolio companies that I would kind of go through that with each of them, you know, the good days and the bad. So that's been, I don't want to say necessarily a good surprise, but because it can be a little bit stressful to live the down stuff in particular. But lucky for us, most of it's been really positive in the first year or so. But it's like having your own children,
yeah,
in some sense.
Right. Well, yeah. And so you look at it and you're like, they're all so great.
That's right.
And, you know, and then, you know, not every part of all of them are great, right? I mean, that's just part of the maturation process. You got to get in there and you got to figure out what's working, what's not working. We've had, you know, companies already in a short period of time change their pricing models, change their business development strategies, change their, you know, kind of product market fit for that matter. And watching that, but through all of those iterations and all that kind of trial and tribulation, it's really cool to see them get it. Like something clicks and it starts to work. And that's just like pure joy for those founders. That's a lot of fun.
It is. I mean, and I go back to when I was a founder and those days that were really, really good when you got the good news, you landed the big partnership, you closed the first big customer, getting to celebrate that with these founders. And when they call you excited or text you to let you know something big has happened, you get to share in that with them. And it's, you know, it's definitely an incredibly gratifying part of the last year.
Yeah. So in the first year, what surprised you most?
Well, I think kind of the two things we've been talking about. I think validating the fact that we could get companies that wanted to relocate to Alabama. I think a lot of people were skeptical of that. So it was again, I'll use the word gratifying that people have really taken to it and not just moved here to kind of take the money and after a year try to move out, really become part of this community and become leaders in it. And that's really been probably the most fun part. But yeah, I think, you know, again, and I said it, it is the emotional side of it. I think the joy of watching them succeed and the kind of fear of waiting for something maybe to go wrong. I think that's all. It's been a, I don't know, just an interesting journey, and it wasn't necessarily everything that I expected.
Yeah. I think it's been surprising to watch the kind of reaction from the community in general.
Yeah.
It's very clear having, you know, spent the last year really promoting, right, Alabama as a great place to be for your startup, and watching how the community has responded to that in such a, you know, kind of robust way and consistently. It's like there's no lack of energy. Yeah. Every time we bring somebody in to take a look, it's like nobody's like, oh, this again, right?
Well, I was with somebody just today that's new to town and kind of visiting and getting a feel for what we're doing. And I'm walking around downtown with them and I'm telling them stories about the development of downtown in the last 4 or 5 years and what's been going on. And I found myself kind of thinking, man, I take a lot of pride now in the city and that's in the state. But, you know, our home is here in Birmingham. Boy, I don't know that I you know, I've been here 5 years now. It's kind of exciting to feel like this is really our home. And I think what we're doing, such a big part of what a lot of collective efforts that are going on around the city are doing to really show people this is a world-class place you can come and do business.
So that probably segues into my next question, which was, you know, what do you think has proven itself out from our original kind of thought around the fund and who we could recruit or who we could invest in or what was out there? What do you think proved out to be, in fact, correct? Because, I mean, listen, we were incorrect about a number of things, but what do you think we got right? Or what do you think we believed to be true that actually happened that way?
Well, you know, one thing for me that was a little bit interesting, we raised a $25 million fund, and thinking about the amounts, if you look around the country, when people talk about seed, especially in places like Silicon Valley and New York, they're talking $2 to $5 million raises. And there was a part of me I was a little skeptical about when we said we're going to write checks in that $250 to $750 range. Are founders really looking for those checks? I wasn't sure. I thought a lot of people would come out thinking, $1.5 million, $2 million is a minimum for a seed. But actually, there are a lot of really kind of lean founders out there that want to do things differently that aren't interested in raising the kind of money that you basically have to in some of those other markets. So I was kind of glad that we found that niche, that there are a lot of founders who are doing it, I think, the way you and I prefer to do things, capital efficient, lean, only taking what you need. I think that was a good part of the model that got proved out.
Yeah, I agree with that. I also thought what was interesting, and this wasn't something that we necessarily thought of, but kind of played into that that approach, was we found out just how many, how few seed stage investors were leading rounds. I mean, that was really kind of shocking, to be honest with you. That was a big learning for me that I hadn't really realized, that all of these early, so many early stage investors were not actually leading rounds. And so for the audience that's listening out there, if you don't know what we mean, it's usually you have an investor that says, it helps set the terms for the deal, help sets, valuation, caps or other, mechanisms within the general terms. None of that really matters. Just understand that they kind of take the lead and then other investors will follow on based on those same terms. And I haven't found that to be a huge challenge to lead rounds. And so it just came back to this. That's a big learning for me. I just didn't realize how few were doing it.
I think even, as a recovered founder, I think I was frustrated by seeing that. I saw so many founders out there who were raising not a huge amount of money, like we were saying, $500,000, $1 million. And they'd cobbled together $150,000, $200,000, but none of these investors would take the lead.
Yeah, it's an interesting point about finding so few, investors that make a lead. Like, this is not a new thing is what you're saying. Like, investors taking the lead is, or not taking the lead is not necessarily a new phenomenon.
No, especially in early stage investing. I mean, you have a lot of angel investors out there that are writing smaller checks. They don't really have the scale to go do the kind of diligence and background checks and legal work that it takes to put a deal of that size together. So no, it doesn't surprise me. It's just disappointing that there aren't more out there taking leads, because I just feel like there are a lot of companies, I don't want to say dying on the vine, but never get past that gap where they really can get the capital they need to find product market fit to get to a significant A round, right? Unless they're a founder that's done it before, has a great reputation. It's just really hard for the first time founder if they can't find somebody that leads.
Yeah, and so that's a good question. So that leads into, some of the things that we found that were kind of disappointing in this process that, I would say that we're still pretty idealistic about all of this,
sure.
Right? We're still wanting this to be a vehicle for founders to build great things and all the things that you would hope it would be. So maybe we're just not jaded yet or whatever, but there are some things that were disappointing about it. I still found this, I found some of the thinking around, investing in non-coastal cities to be a lot of talk and not necessarily as much action. I don't know. I mean, maybe that's just us. Maybe we're just so small at this point that we're not yet on the radars, but it's interesting to me to see something like a Shipt happen, something like Therapy Brands happen, something like Hospice Link happens. And yet we should have people kind of knocking on the door a little bit more than maybe they are. So I was a little, that's my own echo chamber, but I was a little disappointed in that.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe for a lot of founders, we were still an unknown. Before you make a single investment, nobody really knows if you're legitimate. There's a lot of stuff that kind of comes through the investing world that's fly by night, and they make a big announcement, but there's not a lot behind it. So I think you got to prove yourself out a little bit. One of the things I'm excited about as we look into year number two, we have made 5 investments. They're really interesting. The founders are dynamic. They're starting to spread the gospel, for what it's worth, about, working with us. I'm starting to see more inbound. And VCs live, a lot of them, on the inbound. A lot of them aren't doing the work to go hunt and find like we've been doing over the last year. And I think we'll continue to do that. But I think what's interesting is, as reputation spreads and people feel comfortable working with us that we're legitimate, we're starting to see more people approach us, which is, I kind of anticipated, but I'm excited to watch that happen.
Yeah, and this isn't about being, so flipping from disappointed, I think, to your point and the optimism side of it, I found it was really interesting that the inbound kind of, the people who were coming to us unsolicited, right, for lack of a better term, that whole process, the conversations, the whole thing felt very different than when we were out there and kind of approaching them. Like, they would get this random email from some guy in Alabama and you'd first have to start the conversation with, why did I contact you? Who am I? And it isn't as weird as it seems. And the entire like process of talking to them, whether we proceeded with them or not, felt very different. And it almost like, I don't know. I mean, it was, I liked it better, to be honest with you.
Well, you know, just in even conversations in the last couple of months, I've been encouraged that when I get on the phone with founders that maybe we found and reached out to at an accelerator somewhere, they've done a little bit of homework on us and they kind of know and they say, hey, no, we get what you guys are doing. We love it. And we're interested in that conversation. We're having to do less, I think, at the beginning up front going, no, here's why you should take a call with us. It's okay. We're not going to force you to come here, but you know, it's so it's been a little bit different. I've liked it, but you know, we'll see where it goes over the next year.
We alluded to it earlier as far as the kind of the community response to the fund when we announced it. Yeah. But that is one thing that I was very impressed by and I thought was worth noting was just how the community responded to it. I mean, we announced it and then almost immediately, I think the best parts of the entrepreneurial community here in Birmingham and other places really came alive in support of that. What was your take on that? Were you surprised by how much that was?
I don't know if I was surprised. I was excited. I was encouraged by it. I mean, there's so many great efforts going on in the city that I think this was one that was so needed. I mean, that's why you and I started having this conversation a couple years ago about raising organized capital is I think so many things were starting to come together in this ecosystem, for lack of a better word. But the one piece that was missing was the capital. And so when we announced it, because we had really strong and legitimate investors behind us that gave us a ton of credibility, I think it really kind of was a shot in the arm to the ecosystem here. And people said, okay, we're ready to play now. We've got kind of the last piece that needed to be here to jumpstart it is now in place. So no, I think it's been great.
So we've also, I think, talked a little bit about this, but what's for you has been the most fun so far?
Oh, that's easy. It's getting to work with the founders and getting to talk to entrepreneurs almost every single day. Getting on a pitch and hearing somebody talk with incredible passion about their company. I got to do it one time with USHIP with two of my really close friends, and that was such an amazing journey for me. I've been really trying to relive that and find it again. I always make the joke that, you know, I'm a recovered founder, and that's why I'm investing now. I've run out of ideas. I get to kind of relive it through all of these different founders, whether we invest in them, whether we don't, you know, just the passion, the excitement, the drive. It's almost like I get to live vicariously through them, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah, I agree with that. For me, it's been kind of dual purpose, right? So we get to talk about, you know, Alabama, Birmingham, Huntsville, Mobile, Montgomery, all of these different areas, which we either live in or spend time in and feel passionate about. And this has created kind of a sounding board in a new way that didn't exist before, maybe in the way that exists through the fund. And so it's been really fun to play a little bit of cheerleader on behalf of the city. I mean, we both feel very strongly about it. I mean, you're on the school board, so you're really invested in it. And I think that stewardship is also what people are finding when they come here with the other entrepreneurs that they meet that are here. So they come in, they see somebody saying, this is really important to us. We want you here. We know you can make a difference. How can we be helpful? It's not hyper-competitive. It is certainly not a backstabbing culture. We've got people who still understand if it's good for you, it's good for me. And if it's good for us, it's good for everyone. As far as promoting and encouraging the entrepreneurship within the city and within the state.
Yeah, and I mentioned it earlier. I mean, I love talking about this place. I have a lot of pride in doing it. And, you know, I said it 5 years ago. I don't know that was the case. I had just moved here and was getting to know it. Man, I'm passionate about this place, and I'm passionate about what we're trying to build and getting to build an ecosystem that does all the things that I've seen go wrong in other ecosystems. The opportunity for us to play whatever part it is we do in that is really, really fun and exciting.
Yeah. I mean, this is the first place I've ever lived, honestly, where I cared to know why that building is there and what was in it before and why was that important. Never been, I mean, you know, lived in a lot of places, but just never had that sense of like ownership, right? Or stewardship is probably the best word I can use for that. So what's been hard in this process so far?
That's a good question. I think in the beginning, the hard part was figuring out how to tell a founder why they should come here, right? We got better at that. We started to understand the benefits. We knew that there was a good value proposition for why founders should come here, but you know, it took a little time to kind of get that messaging and get them to understand why to take us seriously. I think time is probably the other one. I didn't know, you know, it's just two of us, and there are a lot of VCs running micro funds, you know, a $5 million fund. We don't have staff. You know, people think all VCs are loaded with money. You know, we have kind of a fixed budget, and it's you and me. We do everything from taking out the trash to, you know, reading through the decks and putting the financial models together. You know, we do it all. And so, you know, balancing that time with something that I think is really important to you and me, which is family, has been an adjustment, but a very worthy one and one I've enjoyed doing.
Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, we've certainly spent the majority of our careers chasing crazy ideas and working terribly long hours, right, and doing them in less than ideal circumstances. I mean, that's just... But that's also part of what motivates us.
Sure.
But you're right. I mean, I think that time is a big part. For me, I think the hardest thing is telling somebody no, right? Telling them that, you know, and it's not even, it's one thing if it's a timing issue. You're too early, come back, right? You're too late, go talk to these guys or this group or whatever the case may be. But when you literally have to tell somebody that what they have so far is not investable, right?
Yeah.
And I know, and we'll talk about this in the next part of the series when we talk about the teams that we saw and what we've experienced and how we've kind of navigated some of that stuff, because I think it's really interesting on a couple of levels. But to say all that, I think the problem is when you really look at somebody and you look at their model and you just go, man, it's just not here. And I don't know if it's not just here for us. You worry that you're like, it's not here for anybody.
Right.
And how do you break that to somebody who has been...
Their baby.
Right.
Well, and then on the flip side of that, it's not second guessing, but it's, boy, hoping I don't pass on something that we're going to regret. And there's going to be those cases, right? We're by no means perfect.
Correct.
Right? And I don't think any investor is, but being new at it, you know, we're looking at stuff and you make that decision to pass and boy, you just don't want that. I mean, I want that founder to succeed. And we, you know, I know a lot of VCs say that and we try to, you know, be helpful wherever we can. But yeah, I think it's the fear of missing on something. That's tough.
No, and inevitably we will, right?
Yes.
All right. So how do you think year two is going to be different than year one?
Well, I think we've touched on it a little bit. I think one of the things that's going to help us tremendously is that we have built a little bit of a reputation, and I'm not tooting our own horn. I mean, just that we are out here, we're doing deals. I mean, I think I remember early on.
There's a track record of whatever, yeah.
Well, and I remember early on, somebody who had been an investor in the community, we had made our second investment and, you know, it had been 3-4 months. And they said, man, you're really moving that capital fast. And we went, well, no, that's what we have to do. We have to move at a pace,
that's,
you know.
Right.
And so we've got a track record. We've got founders. We're getting better at our interactions with them, figuring out where we can be helpful with them and where we're getting in the way.
Right.
So we're getting a little bit better at that. I think we're getting better with our time. We're learning how to source stuff better. I mean, I'm really starting to understand what are the accelerators you can really count on, where great stuff's coming out of. So I think we're going to just be a lot more efficient this year as we kind of go out to find those deals that maybe the big guys aren't looking at.
Yeah, I would agree with all that. So what do you hope stays the same?
Well, I hope we stay grounded. I mean,
right.
I think you and I have a real passion for founders and entrepreneurs. And I can see where, you know, I get on, what do they call it? Twitter VC, VC Twitter. And you start to read some of that and go, boy, I feel like some of these folks have lost a little perspective. I hope we don't. You know,
right.
I want to stay grounded and keep this, I hate to say it, it's kind of like a family feel, but that's kind of how we do things. I don't know, that gets challenged as you get bigger. 5 portfolio companies has been a challenge. What happens when we have 10? So how do we keep that perspective, keep being valuable to the founders, you know, while at the same time still being able to source and find great stuff?
Yeah, I think that that's true. I also hope that we continue to get the support of the community.
Oh, yeah.
Our investors have been unbelievably helpful in sometimes I think what people would consider very small ways, but I think you made the point very well, which is, you know, there's two of us. And so when somebody is willing to spend time with founders, our advisory board has done this, right? I mean, hours and hours spending with founders to be helpful. Those little things, I think, mean a lot, not just from the standpoint of it helps the fund, it helps those founders, but it's also too just, I mean, it just reinforces this idea that we're all kind of on this boat, we're all trying to row it in the same direction, and that, you know, if we're working together on this stuff, we have that, you know, potential to really do some great stuff. So yep,
absolutely.
All right. Well, thanks very much for tuning into this episode of This Has to Work. As I said, we're going to do a series on the Alabama Futures Fund. The next episode, we're going to talk about the teams, what we've seen, what we've heard, what we've experienced from those teams. I've been Matt Hoddle. He's been Mickey Millsap. Thanks very much.